Past players, past legends, past legends.
And then Andrew Hunter came on, and he was our government expert, and he was brilliant, and he gave us great insight into what we needed to do to get the Prime Minister involved, which we ultimately did in 2017 or 2016. So it was a huge, I think of all the things that we did, that was by far the hardest. I'm probably second to lifting the club out of the doldrum, out of its doldrums. Doing China was, I think, probably the club's most significant achievement in my time there.
And was the scariest bit in China when you were the first year where you're going to a marquee and Albie Menzel's in the marquee?
Yeah. Well, Albie, for those who know him, has this unbelievable knack of turning up in the most exclusive environments. And you wonder, how the hell did that happen? How did he do that?
His record is incredible.
It's incredible. And he never gives you a ticket, but he finds his way in. Yeah. Anyway, I got a tap on the shoulder in the marquee, and it's Albie. And to this day, I don't know how he did it. Because of the we had Chinese security on board, and they were carrying machine guns, for security. And he got in. So there you go.
Oh,
he's a genius.
Danny Hansen's my other one. That's my mate who walked out of the G and saw a security pass, picked it up, superimposed his own photo on it. He got into, I think it was at least the next decade's grand finals. Wow. So the game was starting at 3:00. He would walk in at 1:01, carrying a laptop and say, "I'm running late. And he never got challenged. He got opening ceremony, closing ceremony of the Sydney Olympics, Cathy Freeman's 400-metre race.
That's a good effort.
He was incredible, the Dane in that way. But Albie's record in that way is just incredible as well.
I was just pleased that he had found it important enough to come to China.
I don't think you were thinking that at the time, KT. No.
Talking of the ground in China, obviously you had to invent one, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we did a lot of reconnaissance. I think I did 19 trips to China, in that little period. And, we couldn't find an oval. They're all soccer grounds. So we found an old army parade ground, which was built in the 1930s, and they were using it as a golfing range, and we looked at it and thought, well, okay, it's got the dimensions, but there's a lot of work needed to be done. And that's to the AFL's great credit. I often they're seen as risk averse or very narrow, but Gil backed this, and we had to go through all the processes, but he backed it, and then they spent a lot of money getting that stadium up. And by the time we arrived, it was pristine. It was incredible, and I remember looking at it, thinking, I don't know how the hell we did that, but they did it, I'm not going to go into all the stories, but it was a Herculean effort. We didn't really know what we were doing. Certainly the Chinese didn't know who we were or what we were about. My first conversation with a government official in China, he said, "You can't call it Australian football. It's got to be olive ball. And here's the word, because we think soccer is football." So it was called olive ball, because the ball looked like an olive. I never told Gil that that's what they call it over there, but that was where we started. They had no idea.
Do you think it'll come back?
Well, it's not out of the question. I know that both the reasons that we did it, both the AFL and Port Adelaide, still exist in my mind commercially.
Well, that's but where I've always said there can't. You know, with, you can imagine Nord people still with Nord, and I've always said no, it can't. It just it won't. People don't understand it enough commercially.
No,
and as I've said to a couple of Nord people, are fanatical about it. You're not making it. This is Nord Footy Club. You're not creating another. You can't. You can't have three corporate entities. You can argue whether SA is big enough for two. It effectively proved it wasn't because Port had to do the China bit.
Yeah.
And what the hell do you? How do you think Nord will survive? And there's a lot of people who just don't get that.
So, Well, yeah, like that. That's a big question, and you know, I think that, you know, I don't want to really go a lot into that because they've got a fantastic group that are working on it now and whatever. But I feel like,
you know where I'm coming from, though.
Yeah, I do. I don't know. It's that's too big a topic. I reckon. But the question around China. How do you if you're the AFL, how do you replace Toyota? If that ever comes to pass, is there a corporate entity in Australia big enough to carry the AFL? And you know, there might be 1,000 of them in China. So that's their thinking, right? Port Adelaide's thinking is, you know, we've still got our China representative employed at Port Adelaide, and we've got a person employed in China just in case, right? They're on scaled down versions, but because what I learned was the international in political environment, you know, changes on a dime
on a day and, daily basis.
Yeah, you know, and so you have to build resilience into it. You know, like we had a period of 5 years where we were in love with each other, you know, like, we were trading well, but COVID changed all that.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to try and recover our way. So I would like to think that there was enough good work done to make it viable to go back. And if I was Port Adelaide, I wouldn't close that door.
And I'll go back to Nord. If Nord managed to do something similar along lines with India or whatever, for mine, is the only way a third team can happen from South Australia.
Well, India is
just
really
using that as an example. I'm coming from.
Is a massive growth environment.
Yeah.
But highly complex, much more complicated than China.
Yeah.
With China, you're dealing with one government, a lot of layers in that government, but one government, and you've got to convince them. In India, it's a caste system. It's layered,
totally different.
And much more difficult politically. Yeah. But they've got the grounds. You know, they've got cricket grounds. You see, so you could actually put AFL grounds in there with much less hassle than we found in China.
It's probably a different. It sounds ridiculous in terms of. You're talking about the same sort of situation, but it's completely different.
Yes. Yeah. Completely different.
Totally different.
Do you think your Austereo salesman sort of came out with a lot of those pitches?
No doubt.
Yeah.
Think about this. Not the Austereo. I was in the commercial space. But my great task at Nova was to convince an entrenched advertising industry and a whole staff that you should buy an ad on Nova, pay the same price that you're paying on our opposition for 25% of the inventory. Because we had a never more than two ads in a row policy. Mm-hmm. So every other ad break in traditional radio, as it is today, is about between 6 and 8 ads. We said never more than 2 ads in a row. And our pitch was they're going to be that much more impactful because you're in a, you're basically standing alone.
You're not switching off.
So that was where the selling skills came in. We had to convince an industry, an entrenched industry, that that was a good idea. And that took years and a lot of hard work, a lot of creativity, a lot of innovation. But I think ultimately we were successful. But you know, that the power of a good idea is what I learned through that process. And when you're representing an entity or a club or a product that doesn't enjoy market leadership, doesn't win the numbers, then you've got to create
something different. Yeah,
you've got to do something different, and that's what I learned in the radio days.
Okay, your decade at Port Adelaide, which, you know, let's be honest, Port swung up and down a fair bit. Not so much supplying. I'm talking more financially and manage and all that. But and then the anti Hinckley side of things, and you know, people. Port supporters not really realising how much that suddenly we were a, any club is 1 out of 18. It's Port, to their credit, won premierships in the SNFL where they shouldn't have. They weren't the best side, but they managed to huff and bluff and get there through inner belief as much as anything, which was extraordinary. Well, I feel you can't do that, and there's a lot of Port supporters still don't really get that. How did you cope then, the ups and downs, in terms of, you know, Port Adelaide? Yes, it was playing up and down a bit, but probably playing side's been a bit more consistent than everything else. How did you cope with all of that, KT?
Well, the philosophy that Ken and I agreed on when he first came in, and Koshy, the three of us, we agreed that stability, consistency, and longevity are the hallmarks of successful clubs.
Yep.
And you can't keep knee-jerking and expect success. Now, the EPL and other competitions may have a different culture, but in Australian footy, we felt like the best way to succeed was ride the ups and downs, stay calm, keep an eye on the prize, keep an eye on the strategy, and that would work. And you know, and I think that, you know, we achieved a lot, you know, like, and have achieved a lot under Ken's reign. You know, like, I think that we've been a very, very consistent, you know, yes, there are moments where we've dipped out of the eight, but we by and large, we've been highly competitive. Yeah. Our win-loss ratio is...
Overall, it's very good.
It is very good. So, you know, if I zoom back and go, okay, has it been a successful program? Yes, it has. Has it achieved the ultimate success that Port prides itself on and demands? No, it hasn't. We've played in 3 prelims, I think, and 3 SNFL grand finals and didn't win them. And so that counts against the program. We had, my view is, it's about a 7-year build, you know, like from the ground up to get an AFL side highly competitive. Where a coach has had enough time to put what he needs in place, and then it's about taking the opportunity when you get it. We had a few of those opportunities. We didn't take them. Narrow misses. I can very, you know, like I still have nightmares about a few of those moments. But you've got to take your opportunities. And I think there are certainly 2 years where we were, I thought, good enough to win. Maybe
bloody unlucky against Hawthorn in that prelim. Let's be honest. You know, there was a bit of Victorian umpiring as well. Yes.
Well, yes. I don't know. Yeah, there was certainly.
And I was American for port. Yeah.
So there's a lot of. Yeah, there was a couple of, you know, sort of really narrow losses in finals. There was a double overtime loss against
West Coast Eagles. Yeah.
Where we thought we were really competitive that year. And so, you know, I look at all that and say, okay, you know, you can have a crack at the program. I think the program has held up pretty well. We haven't taken advantage of some key moments. And everyone will have their view on, is that the program? Is that circumstantial? Is that, what is that? I don't know. But there's no doubt, and Ken would agree with this, he's had enough time in the program to get what he needs and to build what he wants. You know, like he's had that time. The club has been good at giving him that time. And so we're now at the point of saying, well, you know, I say we, but yeah, I'm sure Port Adelaide feel like this, is that nothing else but a premiership at some point, you know, is going to be acceptable, you know, because, you know, under this coaching regime. Ken knows that, Ken understands that, Ken would agree with that. Yeah. You know, like, so, you know, by not taking a couple of opportunities, that puts pressure on. But, you know, I think that what we tried to do was always zoom out and go, you know what, the program's as a whole is standing up pretty well. You know, like it's solid. We're competitive. We're respected. You know, we're around the mark a lot. So
how about
let's win a premiership?
How hard was it at times to keep Koshy away from the football side of it, where he'd come out with, you know, got outlandish comment football-wise?
Well, you know, I'm
sure that would have frustrated you a bit.
Yeah, well, I think, it certainly did, and I was able to say that to him. There was a couple of things to that dynamic in that he lived in Sydney. He was often talking from Sydney, not exposed to all the nuance that goes on when you're inside the market. And he's paid to talk, you know, like it's not like for me, if I could hide, you know, like I didn't have to, front up to a press conference, but you know, I wasn't constantly being asked about it. And he was. So yes, there were moments where, you know, we felt as if, some comments were, you know, put pressure on the team or put pressure on Ken or put pressure on the club. But the vast majority of his time at Port Adelaide as president has been nothing but positive. So,
and he's obviously contacts for sponsorship and things like that. So you've got to sit there and go, well, right.
Yeah, but his heart's in the right place. Yeah,
it is. His heart's, and the goods outweigh the bads, well and truly.
His heart is in the right place. He provided Port Adelaide with a national
exposure,
profile at a time when we were battling to get out of our postcode.
Yeah.
From a recognition point of view.
Yep.
He was instrumental in that. And, that can never be forgotten.
Yeah. Now, KT, I reckon I might have been the one who first said it to you. How much does it mean to you to be the only life member of the Nord and Port Adelaide football clubs?
Well, it's incredibly important to me. People know this now, but I was a Port Adelaide supporter as a kid. Yeah. My dad was a Port Adelaide guy. He lived at Brompton. I love Nord. I feel like, you know, my credentials as a football person were formed at Nord and what I did there. And Port Adelaide, weren't super comfortable with me, a Nord person, with an SANFL affiliation, coming in to Port Adelaide at one of its worst times of its history. People didn't feel great about that, but to their eternal credit, the Port Adelaide community really embraced me. And so you know, and I felt nothing but, you know, support through my time there and since. Yeah. So what the privilege of being able to walk into two incredibly good, powerful clubs, organizations, as a friend,
yeah,
as someone that's welcome, I'll never take that for granted. I think it's one of the great, the great rewards for a life in footy. You know, for me, it's incredible.
Oh, look, it is quite incredible. There's very few people that you know. John Robinson is the only life member of Glenelg and Port Adelaide. You know, it's very few people where
you can have such an impact. Yeah.
That's happened, and it is, and I reckon Pat, I think we're at Uni Oval, I reckon, when I said it to you, KT, and Pat turned to me and went, "You sure, Malcolm?" And that, and I said, "Yeah," and that, yes, and sure. I reckon you sort of nodded and just smiled, and you didn't say much, but I think you were thinking inwardly, "Hey, that's pretty bloody special."
It's certainly special to me as an individual, and I hope. You know, I hope to always feel that love and welcome at both clubs. You know, and I know that it was very difficult for both clubs because we're tribal. You know, yeah. Footy's a tribal game, right? And the Nord, like, as Port Adelaide embraced me, the Nord community felt weird about it. You know, like, and I know they did.
Yeah, I know that, but it's funny, I never struggled with that. I can remember you with your Port tie on and that in the grandstand at Nord, and I just mucked around with you. God, geez, shit tie, KT. But you knew I was mucking around. You knew, Malcolm's got no problem with this. And I actually think you probably appreciated that because there were people who did have a problem with it. Yeah, I probably mucked around a bit and, you smiled and Pat was laughing and it was probably the best thing,
I think you've got to look at it. Yeah, these are traditional rivals. There was a particular spice on it because of the AFL entry.
Yeah.
You know, and the way that played out.
Yeah, true.
And then the manifestation of that was the Magpies playing AFL players in the SANFL, that became a real hot spot.
Yeah.
And I was part of that. So,
yeah.
You know, I get it. I absolutely get it. But I think as time goes by, you know, that those things drift away and you can just enjoy it for what it is.
Probably you didn't really appreciate it 14 where we were sort of going after Nord had won and we got, come on, Keith. Do a little side pump, fist pump, piss off. Yeah. Sort of
okay,
thing, yeah.
Think about that, right?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
That was an incredible game of football.
Yes, it was a great game. So was the second semi, too.
Yeah, it was. So I will have this argument until I am blue in the face about the value of having Port Adelaide particularly, but also Adelaide, the AFL, in the SANFL competition – and competitive, not just making up the numbers because that's treating the competition with disrespect. Have them so that they can compete and retain the rivalries that are so valuable to the SANFL. You know, Port versus Sturt, Port versus Norwood, Port versus Glenelg, Port versus Centrals. These are steeped in history. And if you can imagine the prison bar not in the SANFL and think that's okay, I'm on a different planet.
I totally get that. But here's the Port supporters. To have Nord played Port in a night game last year at Alberton and 75% of the crowd at least was Nord. And that, the bit, that's what's got me that Port people there have dropped off the Magpies like a rapid thing of knots. And that, for me, unfortunately now, if Port would still have people there barracking and you could still have your banter, and I always say to Timmy G, the Williams Gallagher trophy is the most important trophy in world sport when we win. And if you lose, it means nothing. You know, they're mucking around along that. That's what you want. But unfortunately, the Port people have all dropped off. And that's where...
Well,
That's what gets me now.
That's a challenge for the Port Adelaide administration.
Yeah.
And the football program. If Port Adelaide people are very, very switched on to footy, to their footy club, they understand what's going on. And my view is you got to make it, if you make it important, it's important, right? And so the challenge for the Port Adelaide administration is make the Magpies important.
Yeah.
If you think of them as a development group, or you are unable to be competitive because the SNFL has made it too difficult to recruit players in, or whatever the circumstances are, if you send the message that it's not important, it's not important. But if you send the other message...
Bloody oath.
No. When I was there, we want to win premiership.
Yeah.
We want to win an SNFL premiership.
And that's what it should be. And that's when...
That's what Nord wants.
Yeah. Bloody oath it is.
They want to beat a Port Adelaide side that's going flat chat. And when they won that 2014 grand final, that would have been one of the highlights of their career.
Oh, massively. It has to be.
Because of the other dimension was they beat an AFL product.
Oh, it was. And 19 AFL players out there that day and all that. And some of them was the only one, and he's a bloody good player as well, and all that. Now, that was huge. Yeah. And then where I got angry with Port, where Port have always said, well, no, we value winning SANFL premierships, you know, Adelaide, you don't, stuff, yeah, you know, you care. When Port played Centrals in the finals 2 years ago, and the ruckman, Scott Lysett, was best on ground. It's 1 point the difference at three-quarter time, and Port took him off getting ready for the AFL game the next week. And I thought, geez, you bloody hypocrites there. You've always raved about, and I was angry with that. And also, I actually thought it was dumb. Lysett actually needed the run. I thought it was a really dumb football decision as well. But don't sit there and say, we rate it. Winning SANFL premierships is vital, and then go and do that. And that's where I was really angry. And I was there at that game. You know, I'm there as an SANFL nut at that game.
Yeah.
And I said to a couple of guys, I said, this is where they're being bloody hypocrites now. And that's where Port, I think, have lost the plot a bit there. And you're right. They've got to make their SANFL side important.
Well, you know, and I think that's a leadership decision, and you know, and again, I my view, others don't share it necessarily, is that you can do both. You can make both work, and you've got to treat both with absolute respect.
Yeah. So KT, righto, best players played with and against. And you can go any angle here you wish.
Well, the guys that the best that I played with, clearly, the way that I rate this is those guys who have the ability to elevate their game and turn it on and make a difference.
Yep.
That sounds.
No, that's obvious. Fair. Yep.
But that's not easy to do.
Yep.
And not a lot of players can do it, right? Blokes that I played with and against that could do that, you know, for us, you know, Asian McIntosh routinely did that. Ruse and Pert in the Fitzroy days were outstanding in that space. You had blokes like, you know, and this was a byproduct of an incredibly strong SANFL in my time. But
yes,
you know, the blokes like Kernahan, Motley, and Platten, these blokes you'd stand them every week. Yeah, you know, these sort of guys. But they are the, in my mind, right at the top of the tree. I used to love watching Brian Peake play. I loved Morris Rioli. I love Cyril Rioli. I love, you know, the great players, and there's a lot of them. But that group I just mentioned there, I saw that happen up close, and you know, it's pretty special.
I'm going to close with a different one here.
Yep.
I want you to try and describe Pat's influence overall.
Sorry, what was that?
I want you to do, I'm going at a different angle of closing here. I want you to describe and fill people in on Pat's influence on everything.
Patty's influence?
Yes, yeah.
Right,
yep.
Okay. Well, you know, it really, people, you know, when they're making speeches, they always recognize their partner. But think about what I think about is I was allowed to be completely focused, stroke selfish in my preparation for an AFL career and then a national radio career and then a role, a CEO role, which is, as you know, full bore. I was allowed that opportunity because of the sacrifices that Patty made. We had two kids. Everything to do with our house, our move. We moved to Sydney and Melbourne two or three times and back. Paige was playing international tennis. Patty took her on the road all around Australia to make that happen.
I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
Brad, you know, was involved in everything through, you know, everyone with, you know, high school kids knows this. They're involved in everything. Patty did that. My life was 5 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. not present. And just about all year round. And if you then add the dimension of, for 10 years of my radio career, I was traveling interstate 3 days a week as we built the national network. Every moment I was away, Patty was holding the thing up, everything up. And we have a fantastic relationship with both Brad and Paige and their partners, and a really high-functioning family unit. And that is all about Patty's commitment to us. That's how I would describe it.
Look, I knew you'd appreciate the chance to actually
Patty, I do. Thank you. Yes.
Patty the rap that she should get. Look, as I said, I actually go back. I've known Patty longer than you, actually.
Well, high school sweethearts, too.
Yeah, but
so
no, Patty played...
Right.
Patty's sister played netball with my sister, and ridiculous. So, I knew Patty actually before you when I met you. I think in 79, I think. So,
She's
a rock.
We were in grade one together. We were in every classroom through primary and high school together, and got married at 21. So our life
was she always the loudest one?
Yeah, loud, very loud, yes. Very loud, very, you know, I wasn't always the boyfriend. I was just there, right?
Yeah.
We were sharing homework, but, you know, if you think about every memory, we lived in the same neighborhood, right? So I used to walk around to her house.
It's pretty every incredible. Memory
from 5 years old to now, we share.
Yes.
That's a pretty unique thing.
Yeah,
that is
bloody unique, yeah.
And we value that.
No.
Destined in the stars.
Yeah, no.
Yes, yes.
No, Mrs. Footfault's a pretty special lady.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, every now and again she inserts herself.
Oh, yeah.
In, you know, like, and as she should. Just to realign the balance of things, and I've needed that as well.
Yeah, no. I've been involved in a couple of those, if you remember, Kate.
Fair enough.
Yes. Hey, KT, massively appreciated.
Thank you, mate.
No worries. And, thanks, guys. Really, really enjoyed it. What a trip down memory lane. I appreciate the time you've spent on it.
And I'll send it through to you and all when it comes through, and I'll catch up. Thanks, KT.
Great stuff. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, mate.
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.